Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the North Pole. Yeah. We have told those who are in the know to be in touch with the hotel and see what we can do about our chilly weather. We can't handle the outside chilly weather, but we hope to handle the inside chilly weather. My name is Tom Worley, and I serve as Chief of Staff for the Secretary of State's office, a role I've had since January of 2007. I look forward to this session to hear from our three panelists. We want to explain kind of the format of this panel program. It's going to be similar to one you're going to see throughout the afternoon and for most of tomorrow. The opportunity is an agenda, and it should be out on your table. Are items that came out of the election conference held last December and through consultations that were coordinated through the Brennan Center to develop a larger report of what came from the discussions, comments, and panel presentations that took place in December. What this opportunity of this conference is to have a very limited role of our panel members in terms of presentation. They'll give you a context, some initial information perhaps, or even their own views on some of these subject matters. We'll take one at a time. But for the most part, they're here for your questions, or they're here to hear your comments. As we try to have an opportunity to record what takes place in our sessions today, I'll be taking notes. I think we have a regional liaison that may also be helping to take notes and capture the ideas that are coming from you. I also have one request. It'll be a request at each of these breakout sessions, is that you sign up on the list so we have a knowledge of how many have come here. And if you give us our email address, as these topics are fleshed out over the next month or so from compiling from this report, we'll keep you apprised. If you're interested on staying in touch on this issue and hear the latest, or be part of kind of a group that would be consulted with, we're viewing your part of our future workshop of this, that it kind of extends beyond today as this report is eventually developed again through the coordination of the Brennan Center. We want to continue to get people's input. So if I may, I'll pass this over to table, but we're going to ask that this get around, and we ask for everyone's cooperation on that. In terms of the introductions of our panel members, which we call work group leaders, I'd like to identify first Commissioner Dan Troy. Commissioner Troy is in his third term as a Lake County Commissioner, and we thank him for traveling to Columbus today and helping us with this panel program. He knows the trip well. For 14 years, he served in the House of Representatives here in Ohio, and certainly understands significantly issues of funding, both as a county commissioner and as a state representative in dealing with both state funds and county funds. He is currently the president of the County Commissioners Association, so many of his fellow colleagues look to him for leadership in terms of how we look to the issues of counties, including the issues of county elections. Also on our panel is Veronica Sherman. She serves as the Chief Financial Officer for the Secretary of State's office and has done so since January of 2007. And she oversees both the acquisition and the distribution of state funds, SOS funds, and federal funds for election purposes, among other purposes that we have in our office. She also oversees the work that's done by staff on grant distributions, including those distributions that go to County Board of Elections, as well as reimbursements to counties on other qualified designated programs under the Secretary of State's office. Typically, those are pass-through of federal funds for specific purposes. Also joining the panel today is Chuck Miller. Chuck is the director of the Tuscarawas County Board of Elections, and if I'm correct, has been in that position for 23 years of working at the Board of Elections. He is also past president of the Ohio Association of Election Officials and also has served as a past trustee of that organization. He currently serves on the OAEO Legislative Committee, and he also had served in 2007 on the Secretary of State's Voting System Review, the comprehensive review of the various voting machine and voting systems equipment that we have in use here in Ohio. So I think we have a very qualified panel in terms of raising as well as addressing the issues that are before you. And I will open it up to the first topic, which is dealing with the, if I'm correct, current biennium budget proposal from the Secretary of State's office that's been incorporated into the governor's budget proposal, dealing with a revolving loan fund to support County Board of Elections in the acquisition of specific voting equipment. So I'll raise that issue first before the panel, see what context they can give to our discussion, and then we're going to open it up to the floor for both your comments and questions. Thank you very much.
Okay, is this on? I'll go ahead first and kind of give a background here on the language as it's currently contained in the budget bill revolving the County Voting Machine Revolving Loan Fund. And I think everybody heard, especially over lunch, that funding is a big issue for elections. And this obviously is not the answer to the need for voting equipment, both to replace and acquire more, but this is really viewed as another tool that would be available to finance voting equipment for the counties. And basically, as the idea was developed, and what is currently contained in the bill is that an effort to first to seed the fund, and that first seeding is being done really through a transfer from a Secretary of State funding source, which is business services fund revenues. Those are from corporate and UCC filings that are done through the Secretary of State's office. And basically to transfer $500,000 in the next two fiscal years of the next biennium to this revolving loan fund. And those transfers would not happen until the first one would be June of 2010, and the second $500,000 would be in June of 2011. Obviously, those of you who know anything about this know that's not going to go very far, but it is an effort to seed and kind of begin a loan fund. What the bill also does, or the language also does, is it establishes in permanent law language that declares that, and this is all, if anybody knows anything about when the state issues debt for capital purposes, it's very convoluted, but basically what the bill does is it also declares marking devices and automated tabulating equipment to be capital facilities, and it authorizes the Ohio Building Authority, which is basically one of a couple of different debt issuing authorities of the state, to issue state debt to pay for all or part of the cost of acquiring that type of equipment. And the Ohio Building Authority, or OBA as it's known, is the debt issuing authority in the state that is responsible for issuing debt that houses personnel, equipment, and functions of state government. It's the authority that has issued debt to build state office towers, for example. Generally, what's important about this, if you're going to issue debt, would be that the item must have a useful life of at least 5 years. So you can't use debt for operating type purposes. And so how this was envisioned is that counties would acquire the use of the equipment through a lease type agreement with the Secretary of State. And this would have to be an acquisition type program. There would have to be something at the end of the line that was owned. So it cannot be just to pay lease on an equipment that does not have a lease purchase arrangement to it at the end. And basically the state of Ohio would retain ownership of that until the county had met all the terms of the agreement, including repayment. The specifics of a lot of this would be set by rule of the Secretary of State, but there are some pieces in the actual bill. For example, participation in this would be voluntary, a voluntary decision of county commissioners of that particular county, that no more than 50% of the estimated cost to the county could come from this revolving loan fund. And that the one acquisition or one county could not get more than $5 million in total from the fund. And also that the maintenance, repair, and operation of the voting equipment would be the responsibility of the county boards, not obviously of the state. Obviously, the Secretary of State would need to develop an application for the loans. There would need to be procedures in determining how the loan funds would be distributed based upon those applications. And obviously, a loan agreement would also need to be developed that would be used as the agreement between the Secretary of State and the county. On repayment and things like that. It hasn't really been decided and nothing is specifically laid out yet in terms of whether it would be a no interest or a low interest type loan arrangement. and obviously we would have to have a very detailed accounting system at the Secretary of State's office to monitor the loan payments and repayments. And so a lot of this will be worked out as we go through the process of the legislation. I think somebody in an earlier discussion mentioned that no legislation as introduced ever makes it through without some kind of changes in discussion. So just to kind of give you a general sense of what's in the bill now, and I'm sure there's lots of issues and questions about it. I should point out that I sort of used to work for him because I was a staff person in the House Finance Committee when he was on the House Finance Committee, so.
Well, I always treated you well. first of all, Chuck, do you want to go over? Okay. The only thing I was president of the County Commissioners Association during Summit 1 in December, but I'm now the George Bush of the County Commissioners Association. And after I spoke at the Summit 1 in December, I figured it would be a cold day before they'd ask me back, and I guess the room fits that. So, the first question here is regarding, a revolving loan fund, capital assistance, similar to things like energy efficiency, where there's revolving loan funds in the law. I guess the problem from, as I've said in the December summit, as a County Commissioners Association board member, we're not interested in running, we don't run elections, we're not interested in running elections, but we just have to pay for them. So what we are assuming that because there is a something in the bill, the budget bill, that says we're going to create some program where counties can borrow money to buy elections equipment, is that apparently there must be something coming down the road that's going to tell counties you're going to have to buy new or improved elections equipment. And as I said in December, the secretary did promise our association that because there's a big battle about changing out from DREs to optical scans, that she would not decertify existing machinery, DREs, unless an external funding source was found from either the federal or the state government to not burden county governments with that cost. I would hope that the creation of a loan fund does not, in people's opinion down there, fulfill that promise, because the problem with loan funds is that you have to pay the money back. So it's still going to be coming out of the county's pockets. And, you know, the comparison here to some of these energy efficiency loan revolving loan programs, which I know the General Assembly created over the years, you know, usually there's some measurable payback on energy efficiency capital improvements. In other words, you're going to spend these dollars now, we're going to give you the money, you're going to pay us back, but as a result of that, you're going to reduce your energy costs in your county facilities. Same thing with capital improvements. The reason you bond construction projects is because you want to build them in with $2,009 dollars. Not wait until you've saved up the money till 2021, when of course the cost will be considerably more. So there's some sense of that. You know, the bottom line is it's still going to cost counties money with this revolving loan fund. And then the question is, you know, will the revenues, and the reason is because a lot of counties can't afford this now, you know, will the revenue streams and expenditure capabilities be any better when it's time to start paying the installments back on the loan? You know, and I, again, from our perspective, I think the real question continue has to be, and I know when I was asked to do this, I says, you've got to moderate, or you've got to correlate alternate sources or new sources of funding with, you know, continuing to look at the cost of what we do. You know, is continual replacing or retrofitting of voter equipment, you know, the wisest use of our resources? You know, how broke is it that we need to keep fixing it? And, you know, should we get away from this one size fit all? Should counties that executed their administration of elections admirably, with no complaints, with no demerits, you know, should they be forced into this one-size-fits-all philosophy that, you know, we want to kind of have everything uniform? I think where we have problems, we need to fix them, but let's not apply the prescription to everyone. So, again, you know, this particular topic dealt with this particular issue of the loan funds. Again, you know, our concern is that, you know, the repayment will still have to be there. And again, I think that has to be correlated with looking at the amount of expenditures, because, you know, tax dollar, this whole thing of alternate sources of funding, tax dollars is tax dollars. I was chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. I know a lot of things in government are going to kind of, right now, and especially in the state budget, to kind of a fee-based method of funding, but I think there's a little problem with the United States Constitution in terms of doing that with elections. So that's my thought on this particular component of our working group.
When they asked me to do alternative funding sources, my joke back to them was, if I had alternative funding sources, my county commissioners would be happy, because then they wouldn't have to deal with all the problems that you have running the Board of Elections, and the county wouldn't have to deal with the headache of finding the money. The revolving loan fund and that is not actually the means to the end. It's maybe a little bit of a help gap to get some of the counties the equipment they need or whatever, but just like when we changed the DREs, even though we got the loan for the equipment, then all of a sudden I was purchasing vans, I had to build a bigger storage room, I got maintenance costs, I got a lot of other things involved in just getting that new equipment, and that's something that the county commissioners and us, we had to work with. And there's a lot of things that can actually be put under number one, not only the revolving loan fund, but something that we try to do in our county that our commissioners didn't, but I think falls in there, is that the chargebacks and that the Board of Elections do, they actually could go in, like some counties do, like Richland, that into an equipment fund. Those chargebacks could only be used to help maintain or purchase new equipment, and that is something that money you already got there. You're not borrowing it from anyone. It's being set aside. It's drawing a little interest for you if you got it someplace, and then so when you actually need someone, I know Jeff, I've talked to Jeff over years, it works out good for their counties, and I understand why our commissioners at this time don't like to do it, because they are looking when they do the budget, they're saying, oh, you're going to get $100,000 back. I need that to pay the auditor in September. So I know why they can't do my county what they are doing in other counties. But the question is, there has to be a more easier, better solution than a loan. It's like a car loan. The equipment's going to get older. You're going to pay off the loan, and then you're going to turn around and get the loan again to do it again. It's going to be a different interest rate or whatever. So that's just my input on those things.
Frank, I ask a question. When you explained the equipment, if it goes through this, becomes property of the state. Under Ohio Building Authority standards, it's actually owned by the state of Ohio until the county fulfills all the payment requirements. So what if the county just decided, you know what, let's let the state keep owning it?
I guess the state would have some voting equipment.
Okay.
And actually, under this proposal, the state, it is state money that is paying off the bond.
I think the concept of the loan program would be that to help counties who are cash strapped, they need to buy specific new equipment right now, and they know they can kind of go on the payment plan, but they and that would assist them, and whether that's over a 5-year period or 10-year period, how that would be handled. I anticipate the payments would begin immediately, that there wouldn't be like a 5-year waiting period before you first have to pay the first payment on that sofa. I think it'll be more structured, that it is something that we have to recognize the obligation of the county is direct and is for sure, and at the completion of the payment of the loan, the equipment belongs to the county. And of course, that then, as the payments come in, it allows us to have more funds available to give out once again as a loan to other counties as their needs develop. And there may be no one who will use this voluntary process. There may be too many people wanting to use it. We really have to, what the idea is to begin setting up a source for this. There is no capital budget in the making this year. It would be a future capital budget that could perhaps give more than the $500,000 a year seed money that Veronica had indicated is in the current budget proposal. Okay, let's open it up to the floor and see how well we can hear you, or ask you to come to the mic if we can't. All right, comments or go ahead. Yes, Shannon.
I believe that the way that the language is currently drafted, I'll point that out, is that it refers to marking devices and automatic tabulating equipment. So I don't believe would, at this point in time, would include that. So
we realize this is early in the legislative process. We may see that there are folks who would like to see the any restriction opened up in terms of the type of equipment that could be used, be it optical scan or DREs, whether it's things that are currently certified by the feds or something that would be certified in the future by the EAC. So from that standpoint, we're trying to get your input, like at this session today, as to whether you think there are current needs that could be met, and if those needs would be met by different language or different proposals. So we're open to your thoughts on that. Okay, in the back.
Yes, hey Dan, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing, Dwayne?
I've got a question about a couple of subjects. I live just east of where Dan lives, which is almost in Pennsylvania. Thank you.
Just so everyone knows, we are audio recording all of these sessions. So if you could please use the microphone, because we want to capture everything that's the comments here.
Oh, geez, in that case.
I'm being
Dwayne Fair from Ashtabula County, Deputy Director, County Commissioner for 14 years, and another 14, 18 years in state and local government, and 5 years on the board. We should be looking at ways to the printing of ballots. It used to cost us $10,000 in our small county to get ballots for both elections 1 year. Now it's almost $40,000 to $60,000. Why can't the state go out and do a bulk purchasing with the two vendors that we have, and then we can get a better bid, and we don't have to all go out and spend $200-$400 to advertise it in the newspapers? We can save some money and get a lower bid there. Same thing for maintaining this equipment when they go offline. I think we're in a monopoly situation. We've got two or three vendors that manufacture this equipment. Right now, in order to protect the warranty, we have to use their vendors, and they're covering it under the warranty. But what's going to happen in 2011 when we have to start doing this? We're going to have to maintain it. And we'll get lucky. We've had great service from our vendor. But typically, they'll come out and they'll service it, and because of the delivery, it'll jostle the machine. We may have to take 10 or 15 M100s out of service on an election day. We only had that happen once in the last 5 elections. But we should be going out to go for state purchasing on the bidding of this stuff and get more competitive bids. Just the printing. I see that we go out and we either get Barrett Brothers or Sabre Systems. Why can't we open up the poll books and some of the other materials that we use and get bulk purchases on this, and it's user-friendly? They were talking this morning about the confusion. Let's agree and have the state agree on a common voter registration form. Let them go out and get a bulk bid, and then we can get it for a much cheaper price instead of each one of us having to worry about all the things we have to worry about and getting a printer to print it up for us, and then to find out that it maybe was done wrong or we got to get it rejected and have it redelivered again. Let the state put these things out in bulk purchases. I mean, we've been doing it in other areas. County commissioners have been utilizing this for years. Go for bulk purchases on key election items. That doesn't mean we have to use it. Some of the bigger counties that have spent $6 or $7 million on elections may want to go out and use their own local vendors, but it would help streamline our process. A key thing that I learned, especially as a county commissioner, is that whatever we entertain here today and the summit, whatever the legislature entertains, is there's a big difference between the word shall and may. Shall in May is big bucks and lots of aggravation. So, and that goes back to what Mr. Troy said, fellow county commissioner, one size fits all. We need to, anything that comes out of this session today, I'm not saying we shouldn't do it because it doesn't make sense financially, because we've gone through history, our American history, where we found out that, it doesn't make sense to free the slaves, it doesn't make sense to give women the right to vote. Well, it's wrong. So if we're doing things wrong with the voting process, we should try to identify it, but let's try to be cost effective in our thinking on that. And I can go on and on and on, but I'm looking around here. There's a wealth of experience with the Board of Elections officials here. That's the type of stuff that we need. And on the chargebacks, I think that's a great idea, but in the off years, the county pays for it anyway. So why, don't strap the commissioner's hands by saying you can't put money here and there, because I'll tell you what, every elected official in the state of Ohio and their association is trying to get the legislature to earmark money, and there is no general fund. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And if we can have each person that wishes to make a comment or raise a question to use the microphone, as indicated, we do want to record this, and even if we have to repeat anyone who had spoken before, I'd like to make sure we have it on the record. We will conclude at 2:30. So I ask everyone their patience to speak swiftly and make sure we've had a chance to involve as many individuals as possible. If we can, let's stay to the general topic of the revolving loan fund. If we see we're done with that, we'll move on to the next topics. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Aaron Ackerman with the Ohio Association of Election Officials. Two real quick points. Number one, Tom, you and Veronica will probably be having a letter delivered very shortly to your doorstep regarding the revolving loan fund, where Marilyn and Jeanette from the association did sign a letter to Chairman Celeste requesting that the fund be available to all types of technologies. So I think that's on its way, and that's certainly something we want to work with you guys on through the legislative process. And just real quickly, number two, to that second point about bulk purchasing, I think we did make a change in the last state budget to allow boards of elections to utilize state term schedule purchasing. So we should have that ability to leverage the state term schedule on our behalf and make bulk purchases.
Yeah, I think one of the problems, though, is that the state doesn't have any state term contracts set up for printing. But actually, the gentleman before mentioned the thing about one size fits all, and I know there's some issues about that in terms of will every county take advantage of that, and some do have arrangements locally that they don't want messed with, I guess.
Contracts are Hardin County Board. I'm old and I'm blonde and I can't understand. 500,000 one year, 500,000 the next year, but you can apply for up to 5 million.
Well, that was why we called it seed money. It was just to get the fund started. What Tom then started adding in was that the intent is that the state would issue debt into the future, but that is only done in an off operating budget year. The state does a capital bill, and so the state's next capital bill would not be until next year, next spring. And obviously it would be something that we would be competing for dollars when everybody else is competing for capital dollars too, and it's still subject to all the budget issues that the state is facing anyway. But I mean, capital money, the state does an operating budget, two-year budget, in the off year from when they do the two-year operating budget. So that won't be until next year, and we would just be out there competing with the other entities that are trying to get the state to issue debt for their, usually it's, you know, higher education, bonds for capital facilities, for buildings and things like that. That's where the bulk of the money would eventually need to come from, because half a million is not going to go far over it. A two-year period.
Yeah, so the operating budget in the odd-numbered year, you actually have to have the money. The capital bill in the even-numbered year, it's kind of like the federal government, you know, they'll find it later. It's...
Linda Howe from Lucas County, the director. I know it said marking devices or voting equipment. Does that include something like electronic poll books? If we could demonstrate that there would be a savings to the county in the long run?
Yeah, I can't answer that exactly, but I would, part of it would be, is this subject to a useful life of 5 years or more, would be one of the issues. And other than that, I think that it potentially could be, but I can't answer that for sure.
Well, it kind of goes into the revolving loan fund into item number two, about vote centers and being able to cut down on your expensive poll workers. And if you could get the electronic voting, you know, the electronic poll books, it would enable us to have vote centers and eliminate some of the needs for poll workers and eliminate the needs for staff work following election to update all the voting records.
Okay. So that we can hit our other topics as well, can I just ask generally from the audience, do you think going to the effort to establish a loan fund and to have at least initial seed money put into it and having bonding authority provided, even though no bonds have yet been done, do you see that as a constructive step, or do you see that as something, don't spend our time on it? What's your general view, kind of the audience? For those who say it's a first step, can you raise your hand? For those, okay? For those who would say don't bother, can you raise your hand? Okay, for the record, I would say we're about evenly divided in terms of those who see it as a constructive step and those who would say, don't pursue the initiative. Okay. On this next topic, if I may, dealing with cost savings for elections, is looking at the issue of polling sites or how many precincts we have, and recognizing that does have an impact in terms of the cost. Recognizing there are also requirements that you can't have more than 1,400, if I'm correct, individuals registered for any particular precinct. So there are limitations as to how many you can compact. So I'm going to turn this back over to the panel once again for those who wish to comment on it.
Thank you. I had some of my voice votes ruled that way by Vern Reif, too. Down the middle there, but it looked like it was a mixed opinion on the thing there. I guess that would be the kindest thing to say. Okay, this second topic was the cost saving for elections. And obviously that's of concern to us. I read the report from the first summit. I know there were some, a lot of activists in there saying reduction of polling places, will disenfranchise voters. It may, keep people from voting, et cetera. I think, if we look at the reduction of polling places, they're pretty well spread out right now. This may only involve a lot of times a few city blocks. It's not the hardship, I think that many people predict. I guess the bottom line is that, if early voting either in person or by mail is going to take hold, it probably makes sense. That was always my concern at Election Summit 1. If you're going to have this new thing of early voting and a lot of more absentee voting, people voting before Election Day, that's going to cost us more money in terms of postage cost, in terms of personnel cost. Then there has to be some resultant reduction of the costs that take place on Election Day. And I think, again, it's getting away from this one-size-fit-all to allow variables, to be utilized on a local level by your local elections officials. It might not be a good comparison, but, for example, like a restaurant owner, they're going to schedule a lot less help on Monday or Tuesday nights in the restaurant than they're going to schedule on, let's say, Friday and Saturday. So I think you leave some Election Day neighborhood voting in place, but then most elections officials locally are pretty good at predicting turnout within 5 to 10%. And if they know there's going to be a 20% turnout in a given election, then they shouldn't be forced statutorily, to have all of this network out there, so that, the poll workers can exchange recipes, between a voter showing up every half hour. If in fact early voting in person is taking hold, we've got to cut some of the costs on the traditional thing, and same thing on these early voting centers. I think use that same restaurant owner concept. I don't think you need early voting centers or multi-early voting centers except in presidential election years. Don't make these things required every year or on even the gubernatorial even numbered years, because the turnout's just not going to really be there. I just think that in general, from my opinion, we need to get away from this conspiracy theory of election administration. That if we don't have all of these things in place, somehow somebody out there is going to game the system, through administrative practices. They're going to disenfranchise certain voters. That side's probably going to disenfranchise my voters, and the other side is going to disenfranchise the other side's voters and all that. And everything's kind of based on this worst case scenario. My God, what if 99% of the voters showed up today? Are we prepared for all 99% of the voters to show up? It ain't going to happen. So I think we need to, kind of look at that. And again, I like the idea of letting the local folks who have been on the front line doing this saying, let me put the network out there that I need, because a lot of times we question that from the county commissioner's level, and sometimes in a lot of cases Jan will tell us, I can't alter that. That's state law. That's directive. I have to do this. I have to do that. And I have to do this. So I think, let's put as many troops out there as we need to handle whatever's taking place that day, and let's not overdo it, because the resources are just so finite that we just can't afford to do that. So it's my thoughts in that area.
Well, cost savings and reducing precinct size. Of course, back some counties I know are looking at now, read the emails and the reports. Back in 2000, our county went from 121 precincts to 81 precincts. They combined a few of them. But the flip side of that, or the funny side of that, is to keep the poll workers, because we were having a big turnover in poll workers. The cost savings that the board got by reducing the number of precincts, the county, our county commissioners and our board got together. So instead of paying them $95 per election, now we're paying them $185 per election. So the money that they saved by reducing the precincts actually now is just basically the same, because you've just doubled what you're paying everybody else, probably fact a little bit more. And so, and they did it, and it actually has kept the poll workers in our county working every election since they did this over a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. The only trouble we had this time is the state auditor came in and said now they had to fill out 51 different pages for the state auditor. Now they're taking out $10 worth of PRS, and that upset all the people that they were taking $10 worth of PRS out, and even though they were more than doubled their salary to start with. It was just in 30 seconds the other day. People want to quit because of the $10. And so I think the boards and the county commissioners do work very well hand in hand in overseeing the cost of election, because the boards know what they have to do to get the job done. And for vote centers in my area, and I can only speak from my area, it's a rural area, we wouldn't have a building big enough to have what they asked for last year, four of them, and even if we did, that would be rent and then security and transporting stuff back and forth, and all of a sudden now my budget has ballooned again. And so I think the local precinct and voting the way we do in our area is an effective way, but every county's going to have to work it out themselves, what is best for them.
All right. On our issue, we're trying to get a variety of opinions, and we have begun that in terms of, again, do you think, even if you have the same number of precincts, should two or three or four precincts be combined into a common polling center if there is felt that that will create some efficiencies and cost savings?
Don Traxler, Hardin County again. We did that in the city of Kenton. There are four wards, and we have three wards in one building at the county fairgrounds, and the other ward in another building, along with two township precincts. This election coming up, we had no primary, but two school districts were going to have specials. So we requested and were denied because of state law. We thought it would be smart, you know, with one issue on the ballot, to have four poll workers per ward rather than having 12, you know, one per or in each precinct. Mm-hmm. But because of the way the law is written, you can't do that. So to me, that's one law that we ought to really look at, you know, because when there's a special election, you don't need 12 poll workers where, you know, four could do it.
So again, we're looking for any comments or questions from the audience that can deal with this issue of number of precincts or number of polling locations.
Ron Knight, I'm a board member from Trumbull County, and I certainly want to endorse the sentiment that's been expressed about giving the boards greater flexibility in organizing the elections based on turnout and so forth. I think certainly the law about 1,400 voters per precinct should be revised. I could foresee in our county, in most cases, we could operate with a single centralized voting location in each city ward or in each township. It'd be just as convenient for our voters, and you'd give me the flexibility if an election is going to have a low turnout of using 10 or 15 poll workers instead of 40 or 50. In our efforts to reduce the number of precincts, which have met with not too much success, an unspoken impediment has been the impact which that has on the organization of the county political parties. And I would suggest that the law be modified to permit the county parties to determine the number of precinct persons per precinct. In other words, that you, the party could decide whether they wanted to have 2, 3, 4 precinct people per precinct if they wished. I think that would eliminate much of the opposition which exists now to reducing the number of precincts. They could also do it by some formula of so many party voters in a precinct, you get so many precinct committee people. I think if we could lubricate that aspect of the problem, it would do a great deal in order to make progress.
Thank you. Please come forward.
My name is Ted Allen. I'm an associate professor at Ohio State in engineering. And I'm just here to say that we, systems engineering people, we specialize in developing formulas. And it's possible that without much cost, per se, to use the same strategies for locating centers that people use to locate operating depots and warehouses, and then to track. And so what we could theoretically do is help you move up to kind of optimal trade-offs between the distances that people have to travel, sort of summed, and the cost. So it's not a really hard problem to solve, and it's something that there are consulting outfits already doing. But we also can do it in-house with not too much cost.
It's an easy problem to do engineering wise. This is like closing neighborhood schools, though. It's the political problem. And sometimes you just got to march through that.
My name's Tom Hayes. I'm a first year board member, Knox County. I don't know why Election Day is not a holiday. Then we could use the schools and cut down on poll workers and poll locations. I'd like to know why we don't do that.
Another paid holiday for county employees. Okay. Actually, it used to be a holiday.
We recognize a lot has changed. Yeah. People have used schools for years to be the polling locations, and the kids are in the schools, and so are the voters. And now some schools are closing on the day of Election Day because they have concerns about mixing voters and students in the same building in terms of security needs. The world keeps changing, and the people's views keep changing. And so now the third question was more of a brainstorming of looking at different government functions and whether you're dealing with how courts must be funded, and if they are not properly funded, they can go through self-action to suggest that the funding must be provided, whether that be by the county reluctance of the county commissioners or not. Separately, the Board of Elections are to be funded for their responsibility for elections. They too have the opportunity to challenge the county commissioners and go to court. They just don't get to decide it themselves, as the court does. So in this situation, in trying to recognize what are the costs out there for elections and how do we meet those needs in a very difficult time, maybe have a general conversation on that, but then I think we open up to any suggestions you have in terms of how do we make these costs work and how do we properly fund the programs that we need to run the elections.
Okay, Tim. You know, I indicated, it's indicated in the program, I think that there's some good and some bad correlations between elections and courts. Certainly a lot of our commissioners have been on the front line with courts. But when you're dealing with the courts, you know, the rights of individual defendants are more specifically protected in the Constitution versus the rights of individual voters. although I heard some people in the summit one that feel that that should be changed and there should be, you know, constitutional right to vote, and God help anybody tries to register, then someone, you'd be infringing on their constitutional right. But I think these things, to deal with these, I think rancorous relationships between judges and commissioners over the years will escalate into budget disputes, even into budget journalizations where the judge just court orders their budget and all that. The same will occur, I think, in between commissioners and elections boards. And my understanding is there are probably some rancorous relationships out there throughout the state between elections officials and boards of county commissioners. I think much better anytime a mutual understanding of each other's responsibilities and limitations works so much better. But on the same hand, from the commissioner's perspective, you know, we can't have an external overarming, of the elections board by state or federal legislation, you know, the things where, no, you got to have 1,400 people in this precinct, or you got to have this many poll workers, or even directives from the Secretary of State. I'm sure a lot of commissioners heard, why do I have to pay this in this year's budget? And they would say it's a directive from the Secretary of State. So, I mean, those type of things sometimes, will complicate that long-term ability to get along. But as I said earlier, tax dollars is tax dollars. A lot of stuff these days is becoming fee-based. Obviously, we can't do that with elections. I don't know, maybe someone could we charge extra for an absentee ballot by mail by saying that, you know what, it's free to vote on election day, it's free to come in and vote in person, but if you choose to vote by mail, we're going to extend those costs to you. I'm sure someone will say, nah, that's a poll tax, that's unconstitutional. I don't know. I don't think we can sell naming rights or sponsorships on election day. Maybe we should put an assessment against all political television advertising. 5% assessment must be deposited into the local government fund for conducting the cost of elections, because I know there's more spent on crappy advertising in my county than is spent on the conduct of the election. Certainly we would welcome a continuing appropriation in the state budget to pick up more of the cost of elections, but you know what the state is going through. I think one thing we can look at is, and I know we've done this to the National Association of Counties, look at this, why can't we push the federal government to allow franking, free postage for election notifications, ballot requests, ballot returns. In other words, pay free postage for coming and going in the election process. Many would state that such mail being postage-free serves probably a much greater public purpose than congressional newsletters, which are allowed to do that right now with franking privileges. But again, it gets down to reducing the number of opportunities to spend more money. I said this in December, I'll say it again, I know a lot of you agree, we have way too many elections. We need to kill the February, we need to kill the May, and we need to kill the August special election. I got two school levies on the ballot in May for a renewal levy. Now, if they can't sell a renewal in November, and they say, well, they pay for that. Yeah, they pay for it next year. We have to advance the money out of the county budget. We don't recover all the costs. I mean, there's an election every November in this state, and there's an extra one every even numbered year in either March or May, and I think that's the way, in other words, you cut down the number of opportunities you have to spend this money. That's the way to do it. And again, cost versus benefit ratio, don't audit just the election results, let's audit the cost of the process and make sure it's a responsible expenditure of dollars.
All right, thank you, Chuck. Do you have anything on generally?
Turn over to Veronica.
I don't have anything to add. I was actually going to say, boy, looking at whether you're going to do cost savings or revenue enhancements in the current environment, that we have to go with cost savings. But you, Commissioner Troy, had all kinds of really creative ideas that are. I really like the thing about the free postage for election things, because as we talk about, elections by mail and vote by mail, and some people have talked about it especially for a special election, and I know there's legislation out there about changing, because currently we have to do a special election to fill a vacancy in the U.S. House of Representatives, but the governor appoints the senator, and that's, so anyway, there is legislation now to say, no, we better have a special election to fill a U.S. Senate seat if that's vacant, and that's money. That's huge cost, because that's a statewide election. So anyway, to do a vote by mail for special elections obviously is something to look at, but postage isn't cheap and it's going up again, so I really like the franking idea, but of course.
At great risk, I'm gonna ask, do you believe that the cost of postage for, let's say, absentee balloting should be covered at no cost to the county and the state? Okay, those who would oppose that? Okay, I would say we didn't have a mixed result. It looks pretty much a consensus for those who chose to express themselves. We're working on the math. And from that standpoint of saying yes, that would,
vote is always positive.
That would be very helpful. Okay. Other suggestions that we can get from you, if you'll join the mic, in terms of, again, cost savings that you think should be noted or other revenue sources to be tapped.
Took my coat off because the room got warm. Thank you. I'm looking at this as a voter because I'm here as a spy. I'm a taxpayer. I like the idea that you brought up, first of all, political parties or private organizations. Primaries, let them solve it. And I'm looking at it as a voter now. I find it's very difficult to get good voter decision-making information in the primaries. And most of the independents don't even participate, so they're pretty much disenfranchised. Well, so getting rid of primaries is a thing worth thinking about. And if somebody wants to run a public-funded election, then let them pay for it at the primary level. Maybe we can get away from the primary itself as a voter. I think, you know, I don't have enough information to vote most of the time. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, Bill Buckle, Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah. You know, I think I was saying, I mean, the primaries, you have an even numbered years. They're probably a necessary evil to nominate candidates. It's the special elections that, and you mentioned disenfranchised. I mean, the whole concept, a lot of these school districts, is let's have this in August. Hopefully nobody will show up except our supporters. Talk about disenfranchisement. That's the game plan there.
If I may interrupt for just a second, I have a process issue. We will get to your point because we only have about 5 minutes left. We had to be circulated among the whole room, a list. Is that still being circulated? That we'd like to have your name and email address if you want to be kept informed of this particular topic in the future. And Ron will work with you. Thank you, Ron. And please go ahead. Thank you for waiting.
Thank you, certainly. I'm Betty McGarry, Butler County. Commissioner Troy, I loved your ideas on postage-free, absentee voting, but let's take it a step farther. We were required to mail, as all counties were, voters their polling place locations prior to the election at a cost of over $50,000 in Butler County. So I'd like to add that to your suggestion that to notify voters of their polling place location, let's talk with the postal authorities on making that gratis also. I also wanted to comment, two other comments. It's so important that we lobby our county commissioners. It's so important that we have a good working relationship with our county commissioners. And you know, we're all of one political party or the other, and it's especially important for us on a county level to at least always have a good working relationship with two of them, okay? To our advantage in Butler County, to keep that door of communication open by showing the county commissioners where we really can honestly cut. They've come to trust us. That's so important that they trust us, that our word that we're cutting in this area, but we just can't meet you in this other area. We have to have the funds in this other area. So it's just been a great open door working relationship with us and our county commissioners. Thanks.
And we'll get
counterpoint to that, please? We have primaries every year in Franklin County. We've got judges, we've got city council, school board.
Am I correct that the legislation that mandated by the state to do the early notification to the voter was sunset?
Yeah.
And so that'll be up for discussion, I'm sure, as we look to comprehensive election reform, whether the sun rises again on that or the sun remains set. Okay, our final person in terms of comments or questions.
Terry Burton from Wood County. And one of the things that, I know the point of this whole session or this whole summit is some legislative reform. But what we've experienced in Wood County is every time we get legislative reform, that ups our costs. I agree with the shall and may argument, but when we are trying to streamline our legislation and the Ohio Revised Code, we need simplicity and we need stability, and those will reduce a lot of costs in what we do if we have those two items.
Okay, well, I thank you for your participation in the session. And in 15 minutes, we'll be on to the next round. Thank you. Well, we